Hello, and thank you for listening to Call the Roll, a public affairs program produced by the Columbus City Council and aired here on Freedom FM. I'm your host, John Ivana, Communications Director for the Columbus City Council. On this week's show, one of the most important neighborhoods in Columbus has something to celebrate. The American Addition neighborhood is located in the north-central portion of the city, just a few miles from downtown. It has long been considered the first African-American community in Columbus, being settled about a century ago. Now, six single-family homes located on Lee Avenue have been built. With the help of Neighborhood Stabilization Program 2, or NSP $2, by both the city and the county. Here's Councilmember Priscilla R. Tyson, the chair of the Finance Committee.
It's amazing to come through this community and see the changes. And I can say that because I'm born and raised in Columbus and have lived here my whole life. And I remember driving through American Addition to get over on Joyce Avenue to move forward, to continue to move forward to get over to the north end of Columbus. So over the years, I've been able to spend time in this community. And I can tell you one thing that's been constant in this neighborhood. Good people have always lived here, and many of them have waited a long time for a day like today. Since the revitalization effort began in American Addition, one phrase has often been used to describe this neighborhood is long neglected, and that's unfortunate because that only tells a part of the story. American Addition was neglected, as the mayor mentioned, for far too long by the public and the private sector. But the people in this neighborhood never neglected this community. They love this community, they've nurtured it, and they are proud of this community. And now the rest of the world is catching up with what people like Marie Moreland Short and Minda McCoy Quaz, and Marie's late husband JC, and her son Jimmy. They have worked tirelessly to make sure that this community was not forgotten. American Addition is an important part of our city's history, and as we celebrate our bicentennial, it will continue to be an important part of our city's future. Many partners today have joined in this effort, and I want to thank each and every one of them. It's impossible to name every single one, but I certainly want to thank Senator Brown for making sure that we got the NSP dollars to our community to make this happen. I also want to thank the mayor again and his leadership, because without that, even though he has spoken about all the other individuals who have said they were going to work on this community and improve it, they did not do it. So I thank the mayor and his leadership. I thank my council, because as been stated, this council will be $10 million for the infrastructure in this community. We are your partner. I thank Amy Claiborne and Homeport for their amazing work, and I thank the county, all the commissioners, for the work that they have done to improve this particular community. So thank you. This community is seeing a new day. It's an honor and a privilege to be with you today and to celebrate the homes that are now in American Addition. Thank you so much.
The homes range from 1,400 to 1,600 square feet, all meet the green standards and have detached car garages. The prices from about $117,000 to $119,000 are available to income-qualified buyers. All new home buyers will complete a HUD-certified home buyer education program in Homeport's Housing Advisory Center. From Homeport is Craig Murphy.
So I think what's really at the heart of today's event is a celebration of the resiliency of the American Addition neighborhood. And I think that we all agree that neighborhood change is generational work. And if you accept that, then today we're celebrating the regeneration of American Addition. These three and four bedroom homes are designed by Sullivan Brook Architects and Kaiser Design Group. And they represent, as Mayor Colbin stated, a much larger and long-term regeneration of this neighborhood. The six homes you see are built by KMM Builders, a woman-owned company. And over the past few months, This company has proved that they're more than just home builders. The residents will tell you that they're community builders as well. So we thank you. So revitalizing this neighborhood means three things. It means bringing back improving the infrastructure in this community. It's improving the housing stock of the existing households, and it also means bringing new housing opportunities to this community. But regenerating this neighborhood means one thing. As I've learned from Mayor Coleman and City Attorney Pfeiffer, that neighborhoods are about people. And our work needs to be about building resilient neighborhoods like this one. Reverend George Jordan grew up in American Addition, and he reminds us that we can't help the circumstances to which we're born. You don't control where you're born or how you're raised, but there's a universal truth out there, which is that we all want a better circumstance for the next generation. And I hope that Reverend Jordan agrees that things look better for the next generation at American Addition.
Through the revitalization of the neighborhood, Homeport will build a mixed-income community comprised of 100 energy-efficient, high-quality homes. Here's longtime American Addition resident Stephanie Morris with her family's story about how the neighborhood has enriched their lives.
The house that my mother and I currently reside in was built by my grandfather, Randolph Morris, in 1925, which is my father's father. Both my parents, Jean Douthat and Frank Morris, were born and raised out here in the American Addition. My mother was born at 1268 Zisbee Avenue, which is the next street over. And my father was born at 1330 Lee Avenue, which was a house standing there in an empty lot. When my father was 5 years old, the construction of 1334 Lee was completed, and my grandparents and his family moved next door into the dwelling there. My mother told me that growing up as a teenager, it was very unique out here because all of the supplies and everything that everyone had out here was made by the residents in the community, such as stores. Stores were originated out of people's homes. Also as a teenager, my mother told me of the dances that they had at the place called the Barn. And you see Miss Minda likes it, so... Well, my parents were married. Their wedding took place in the front room of 1334 Lee Avenue in 1945, thus starting a third generation of the Morris family. Growing up out here in the Addition for me was fun. We had our own recreation center called Trey Lee, which used to previously was a fire station operated and volunteered by the firemen from the community. My father being one of them, we also have our own park known as the Ball Diamond. Living out here, as for me, this is where I also learned how to drive. So, if you've seen somebody out here driving around in circles 4 or 5 times, you knew that's what they were doing. They were learning how to drive before they went out there to Joyce Avenue and Fifth Avenue. Turning 18 and becoming young adults, of course, you move away. You move away from home and start your own lives, only to return to the place where your life started. 1334 Lee. I'm sure that the reason that my sister Constance and I have returned here to the Addition is because we know firsthand that this is the best place to live, start, and raise a family. My sister has built her house out here next to my mother 10 years ago at 1334 Lee. She's right next door. Residing with her is my niece Tanisha and my great niece Jalen. She is our fifth generation out here in the American Addition. My niece Lisa and her husband Frank has also built out here. They have a beautiful home on Puritan Avenue. I myself will be obtaining 1309 Lee Avenue.
All right.
For me and my grandchildren to come out here. In my family alone, we have 5 generations that have been out here and are currently being raised out here in the American Addition. So with that being said, I will recommend the American Addition as being a very good choice for you to consider your residency. Thank you very much.
Beautiful. Beautiful job. Good.
The next interview was previously broadcast on October 1st of 2011. Up next on Call the Roll, a conversation with the Municipal Clerk of Court. She is Lori Tyak. She has a lot of great initiatives helping to make Columbus a great place to live, work, and raise a family, as we like to say. Clerk Tyak, thanks for joining us here on Call the Roll.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me today.
You've been in this position for a few years now?
Yes, I took office back in 2006.
Okay. Talk to me about what the Clerk of Courts, what the office does.
Well, the mission of the office is to collect court costs and fines and also to keep the record for the court. We have 15 judges and 6 magistrates that the clerk's office serves on a daily basis.
Talk about the difference between municipal judges and what we see on TV a lot of times, the common pleas judges, because I don't think people understand that there's a separation there, but yet they're tied together.
Yes, well, small claims court cases are very similar to Judge Judy and some of the shows you see on television. They are usually real cases, which is always interesting to me. I actually met someone who came in and researched our small claims court cases to offer those individuals the opportunity to go on television. So that was kind of fun. The damages are what divides, the levels of damages are what divides those courts. Basically, small claims court, anything less than $3,000 in damages, you do not have to have an attorney to represent you in court. Municipal court judges hear mostly misdemeanors, but they do hear some felonies at arraignment court. We begin the process in municipal court with arraigning everyone. We take their plea, guilty, not guilty, no contest. If it's a felony case, oftentimes they're dismissed for future indictment, and then they're bound over to common pleas. Common pleas hears more of the serious kinds of criminal cases. Mm-hmm. For civil cases, they hear common pleas hears anything with $15,000 in damages and up, and municipal hears everything from $15,000 in damages and less.
I think that's when people are watching TV and they see someone arrested for a crime, a very serious crime. That's why they start off in a municipal courtroom, and then the case will go to common pleas.
That's correct, and a lot of times those people are in custody, and the judges in municipal court are the first to set the bond for those individuals.
And what type of services do you provide the judges in the municipal court?
We offer support in the courtroom. We actually have clerks in the courtroom that assist the court in any way that they need to be assisted, make sure that the record is kept up to date and everything is completed by the end of the day, no matter what case it is that was heard that day.
Talk about the volume of not only paperwork, cases, people that your office will come across in any given year. And how does it stack up against other municipal courts in the state of Ohio?
We actually are the largest municipal court in the whole state of Ohio because of the volume of cases that we handle. We have over 1 million people in our building every year, about 20,000 a week, sometimes more. So we have a lot of business because we are a countywide jurisdiction, even though it's a municipal court that's funded by the city.
But other municipalities also participate.
Other municipalities, mayor's courts, we have 19 mayor's courts in Franklin County, and they are technically under us. We're the higher court. So if anyone has a case in mayor's court, they can transfer that case to municipal court to be heard before a magistrate or a judge.
Talk about taking care of the volume of paperwork and records that your office has to go through and how maybe that mission has changed a bit over the course of the last 4 and 5 years.
Well, the volume of caseload that we have is just unbelievable. If you can imagine the requirements as far as how long we're to keep a certain document, it's a retention schedule, and that retention schedule is set by the Supreme Court of Ohio. How long do you think we keep DUIs, John?
I have no idea.
50 years. So we have to keep those records for 50 years. Other cases are 25
years.
We
barely had cars 50 years ago.
Yes, that's very true. But so the paperwork is very hard to deal with. What do we do with all that paper?
Yeah.
Well, we've spent about $2.7 million having all of the records from 1992 to 2005 imaged and shredded, and we've actually recycled those and shredded those documents and recycled that paperwork. So it's been wonderful to see that happen, and we're also working on day forward imaging so that if someone would like to have a copy of a record, they can come up and ask at the counter. We can look it up on the computer, print it out, and it's right there. We don't have to go and find the hard copy of the file.
So I imagine you take up a lot of space on South High Street.
Yes, we do. When I took office, we had 13,000 boxes in every nook and cranny in our building, and that's what we spent the $2.7 million on, getting all those boxes out of the old files, imaging them, and just being able to access those files through electronic images make it a lot easier, a lot more efficient. And one of the things that we deal with are officers in the field requesting information. And if we have the ability to look up those records at our fingertips, it's also a benefit for them. It used to take us up to 20 minutes to find a file when we had to go to another floor and dig through boxes. So they're safer on the street because it takes less time for them to get the information they need, and we're able to provide it in a more timely fashion.
You're also a more transparent office for the public.
Yes, we are. Everything that we do is recorded in an annual report, and we provide that to the city and the county commissioners so that they can track the kinds of cases we handle, the volume of cases, and over $50 million passes through our office on an annual basis. So all of those records are captured in the annual report and provided, and that is available to the public on the website at FCMCClerk.com.
FCMCClerk.com. Talk about the customer service angle of what you and your employees do, because when someone is interacting with the municipal court, it's maybe not the most pleasant interaction. They're there to pay a ticket, a fine. There's something legally that has gone awry. Talk about having to not only put on the best face, but also try to make the experience a positive one for the individual.
It is very difficult a lot of times when people come down to the clerk's office. They have a loved one in jail. They might have just gone through arraignment court. They don't understand the process, what's going on. So we've really focused on improving our customer service, explaining to the families of the defendants what's going on, how they can get their loved one out of jail, and what's required on a bond if they have to pay a bond. Also, when people come down to pay their traffic fines, we try to speed up that process by having everything entered in the system as quickly as we can. We depend on officers to turn in their traffic tickets in a timely manner so that we can then do that data entry and make sure that everything's available in the system. We've really focused on making people feel comfortable. We have a very diverse staff, and it reflects the diversity of the community. And the goal in that is to provide someone that reflects the community on the other side of the counter. So in the clerk's office, we have a lot of individuals from the African American community, from the Latino community, we have someone that is from Korea, someone that's an Egyptian. They can come up to the counter, help those individuals that are from the communities, and make them feel more comfortable helping them get through the process.
You launched a kiosk program a few years ago. Talk about that.
Yes, we did. We put a kiosk out in the main foyer as you come into the courthouse for those individuals that would like to pay with a credit card, and maybe they don't have time to walk through the line, or they are really close on time. They can walk in and pay it on the kiosk. We also offer e-payment services online with traffic tickets and enforcement cases. And we're very proud to announce that we are actually collecting 100% of the court costs and fines owed to the city, the county, and the state. We have been able to offset the cost of the merchant service fees by passing those costs on to the defendant. About $3.55 on average is the convenience fee that's charged to the person paying the fine online. And we've saved $100,000 already this year and cut our banking service fees in half. We've gone from about $8,000 a month in banking service fees down to $4,000 a month just with the electronic payment program.
We're visiting with the municipal clerk, of course, Lori Tyack, and because of the amount of information that you have, there are always security concerns about the information. You are a keeper of the record. You're also a keeper of some very sensitive information about individuals.
Yes, we do have a lot of documents on file that have social security numbers, bank account numbers, because a civil case might require a bank account number, garnishments, all kinds of personal information. And I take very seriously the need to keep that information safe. We are very careful not to put images on the web because we're very concerned about identity theft. And I am not personally 100% confident that the programs out there that offer redaction services are completely accurate. So the last thing I want is to put a document out there and then have someone's identity stolen because of that.
Talk about the Safe Surrender program. Very successful about a month ago. Talk about why you teamed with the judges and law enforcement here in Franklin County to help people come in and really work through the legal knot that they may have been in.
Well, the Safe Surrender Program was originally started by the U.S. Marshal Service, and it was funded by Congress at that time. This year, Congress did not reinstate those funds, and the U.S. Marshals were kind of taken off out of the picture. However, in the Municipal Clerk's Office here in Franklin County, we realized the need for individuals to try to deal with those cases that maybe have been holding over their head for a long time. A lot of people haven't been able to get jobs, and a lot of those people have also had their licenses suspended. Our program focused on traffic violations and criminal, nonviolent criminal misdemeanor cases. And basically, the purpose of the program was to provide an opportunity for those individuals who had a warrant for their arrest due to not paying their traffic violation or some other enforcement cost to turn themselves in for favorable consideration to have their case resolved. The court was a major partner in this program. We resolved over 2,000, we had over 2,000 people attend this program in a 2.5-day period, and we were able to set aside over 2,470 warrants.
The court is under no obligation to do this. I mean, it's the individual's obligation to make sure that they have taken care of what they need to take care of to satisfy the court and Ohio Revised Code and local laws.
It is the responsibility of the individual to come in and take care of their court case. But a lot of them are afraid they're going to be arrested and put in jail, so they let it go. Oftentimes, it will go for years. We had a case that was from 1985 that the individual came and turned himself in to get that case resolved. It is the responsibility of that individual. The court, however, saw the need in the community to try to help encourage those individuals to come down and take care of their cases so they could get on with their lives.
Because I didn't realize how one traffic ticket, not paying that one traffic ticket, can actually, you know, the penalties are exponential. As far as the state's concerned, as far as getting a license, and if you don't have a license, you can't get to work or Social Security. I mean, the penalties can go on and on and on.
The penalties do seem to snowball. If you don't pay your traffic ticket, the first thing we do is put a warrant for your arrest. The judge signs an order for the warrant. And then we are also told by the court to suspend the person's driving license privileges. So we actually send information to the Bureau of Motor Vehicles daily on that information. And that person's license cannot be reinstated until they pay the court costs and fines and the reinstatement fee. So there are a number of fees that continue to compound the situation and make it very difficult for that person to get out from under that situation.
Talk about where you want to take the office in the coming years. What's on the horizon? Maybe use of technology. Where do you see the clerk of court's office going?
Well, we've really been working on improving our technology. We've actually upgraded all of our computer systems. Our carbon footprint has been reduced by 50% in our data center. I believe that we need a strong foundation to build upon for the future, and we have built that foundation over the last 2 to 3 years. Day forward, I expect that we'll be doing a lot of imaging of those documents to better manage the documents and also to be able to provide those documents more efficiently and more accurately and more quickly to the court and the public. One of the things that we foresee in the near future is an electronic filing program. I know that Common Pleas has just started their electronic filing program, and we are interested in discussing the possibilities with the company that they use to see if we could combine our resources.
So if someone wanted to initiate court action, they could do so without filing hard copy?
They could do so without filing a hard copy. It's much like when you send an email to someone with an attachment. We've really worked on creating new efficiencies in the procedures that we do. We've looked at everything we do, kind of analyzed how we're doing things, and tried to create better business practices. I do run the office like a business. I feel that it's important to make sure that it's as accurate as possible, because we do affect the livelihood of those individuals that we're serving as far as keeping those records. So we're very careful to protect private information, but we're also very careful to be as accurate as possible and provide that information in a timely manner when necessary.
Do you also interact with other clerk of courts from around the state?
Yes, I am currently the president of the Ohio Association of Municipal and County Clerks for the second year in a row, so I'm very pleased to say that. But we do have an email network that when there's a question one of us has, we email it to all the clerks that are a member of the association for their answers and their ideas. And it really does make a difference when you're able to share with other clerks and courts the purpose, you know, purpose of what you're doing, how you're doing it, and ask if anyone does it a better way. So we learn a lot from each other.
Where can folks turn to for more information?
www.fcmcclerk.com.
Lori Tag, thanks for joining us here on Call the Roll.
Thank you so much.
We are out of time for this edition of Call the Roll. If you have a question or a comment, please email us at calltheroll@columbus.gov. That's callthe@columbus.gov. Don't forget you can follow the Columbus City Council on our Facebook and our Twitter pages. On behalf of the entire Columbus City Council, I'm your host, John Ivanek. Thanks for listening to Freedom FM, and have a great weekend.